This is an ABC podcast. This is the Victorian Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
Hello, it's Peter Somerville with you for the Victorian Country Hour today, coming to you live from Gippsland. And I'd like to again welcome ABC Melbourne listeners who join us for the program today.
Country War on Wednesday morning was like war zone.
As we've heard this morning, fires continue to impact communities across the state. Suggestions there, Kajiwa, like a war zone. After mass evacuations over the weekend, the threat has now eased slightly and a sort of temporary recovery has started. The fires do continue to burn though, but it's allowed some access, which gives us an insight into what's happening on the ground. Stay tuned and we'll bring you the latest as we unpack what's happening in these agricultural communities. And as always, do send us a text and let us know what's happening in your part of the world, 0467 842 722. But for a statewide view of what's happening in regards to the fires at the moment, first this afternoon on the Country Hour, we're joined by Luke Hegarty at the State Control Centre. Luke, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Could you walk us through what's happening across Victoria?
Sure. So today we're certainly seeing a much kinder day in terms of fire conditions, and that was similar to what we saw yesterday. The rainfall that has moved across some parts of the state has certainly eased conditions, but is by no means an indication that we're out of the woods yet with these fires, and certainly not enough rainfall across any part of the state really to bring back the moisture that's been sadly lacking across many parts of the state over the past couple of months. So I'll take you to East Gippsland to start with. We've now this morning been able to downgrade all of our warnings in that region to watch and act level, and that's the same story in the northeast. So we had a couple of emergency warnings still in place earlier today and they've all been downgraded now, but we've still got a very significant portion of the eastern part of the state and into the northeast with watch and act messaging in place. It's really a reminder that although things look very different outside today to what they did a couple of days ago, it's not going to be long before we see a return to that warmer, windier weather on Thursday and Friday, and that's when we expect to see some challenges again in terms of threats to communities with these fires that are going to continue to burn for some time.
And what happened down in the southwest? There were some evacuation warnings down there over the weekend as well.
That's right. So we did have some activity in the southwest of the state, and it's certainly been very easy to get caught up in what's been happening in East Gippsland and the northeast. The good news there is that we didn't see any significant fires spread in the southwest on Saturday. Some really, really good work by crews in that part of the state during the week meant that, generally speaking, the fires stayed within their containment lines, didn't spread significantly, and so now we've just got a couple of advice messages out for a number of fires that are burning around Hotspur, around the, on the Portland Nelson Road in the lower Glenelga National Park, and then at Budjbim National Park as well. So that's a good news story that we haven't heard a lot about, I suppose, because there's been such an intense focus on the significant fires in the east. But great work by crews in the southwest have meant that that was a bit of good news for people in that area, and certainly keeping those fires as small as we can is a great effort by our crews and means that we can continue to move our resources around to the other fires as they develop.
Mm. And Luke, I reckon the other great story, which communities in the Pilbara probably wouldn't agree with me, but is what we just heard in the news, that there's the possibility of a cyclone forming up that way, and we can only hope that that will bring more rain down here. But what are your expectations for the next couple of days? Which day is of most concern from here?
So we've got a couple of good days ahead of us where we'll be able to continue some containment works on these fires, really with our focus being around Thursday and Friday. So continued containment work means that we can try and limit the spread of these fires when we see those northerly winds return. So we're not going to be able to contain these fires completely, but we can target our efforts so that townships are protected and that we try and limit the overall spread of the fires. Thursday and Friday, we see the temperatures pick up again and the winds as well. Friday's got another wind change coming with it, which means we're going to see that gusty southwesterly wind move through. At this stage, the indications from the Bureau are that it's not quite at the same level as what we saw on Saturday, but it's still a significant day. It would still be a day that we'd be keeping our eyes on. And then it'll be interesting to see what happens after that, Pete. So I think certainly hearing about that formation of the cyclone certainly gets people interested. We do know that sometimes when weather systems align, that we can see that tropical moisture be dragged down across the interior and come and join up across Victoria. That would be terrific. We know that the rain that we're sadly lacking needs to come in vast quantities to really help us contain these fires. We don't want to be too picky, but we do know that when we get a bit of rain, but not too much, it actually can slow our containment works at times because it's unsafe for us to put our crews out into the fire-affected areas, particularly when tracks are slippery and potential for other impacts in fire-affected areas when we see rainfall in those spots. So we're hoping for rain, absolutely. If it comes in big amounts, then we'll be even happier.
And your crews, the volunteers, the firefighters, they have been battling these fires for quite a while. How are they going in terms of fatigue?
So we've done some work over the past few days to make sure that we're rotating crews in and out of the northeast and Gippsland. We know that last week was a really big week for those crews, both on Monday and on Saturday into Sunday. Exceptional efforts by some crews to undertake very, very good protection of a number of townships across those regions. They're certainly well and truly due for a break, so we're making sure that where we can that we're rotating those crews through. We know that there's going to be a lot of work ahead of us, so we need to make sure that that we're pacing ourselves. And I think it's also an opportunity to recognise that the exceptional effort over the past week has not just been down to the firefighters, but been incredible support services provided by local councils, Red Cross, all of the support networks that have been established within these communities, to staff relief centres, to provide all of that important support that keeps our communities functioning, gets them back on their feet and helps them prepare for what could be some continued challenges from these fires, because we know that whilst we're seeing that respite today, that communities will continue to see these fires potentially threaten them for the weeks to come, and it means that people are going to be constantly shifting out of a heightened awareness of these fires, when we'll see the warnings potentially be increased back to emergency warning and advice provided about what sort of weather we're expecting. Today's like today, where people might be able to take a breather, but certainly not lose focus of the fact that these fires haven't gone anywhere and it'll be a while before we've got them contained.
Well, we do thank all of those people involved in the firefighting effort. And Luke, thank you also for your time and joining us on the Country Hour.
Thanks, Pete.
Luke Hegarty there from the State Control Centre, joining us on the Victorian Country Hour.
The Victorian Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
And thankfully, a few fires have been downgraded this morning. Currently across the state, we have 15 fires burning at watch and act level and no emergency level fires. And also an important notice here. We've had a call from Victoria Police to remind drivers in those fire-affected areas or people who are on the road where there's smoke, really, that they should turn their headlights on. So if you're on the road, make sure you've got your lights on. A place where there has unfortunately been a lot of smoke lately is Mallacoota. And today on the Country Hour, we are starting to unpack the impact on the state's primary industries. And a facility that has been impacted in Mallacoota is the Abalone Co-op. I'm joined by the chairman, Jeff Ellis. Jeff, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Peter. How are we?
I'm well, but tell me your facility in Mallacoota has not been so lucky.
No, it hasn't. First and foremost, we didn't lose any lives, so that's the critical element. And can I also, before getting on to that, thank the ABC for their communications throughout this period of time. It's been absolutely fantastic. I haven't been able to get into Mallacoota, so the updates provided by the ABC have been absolutely integral and very much appreciated. The co-op, yes, it's been in Mallacoota for approximately 50 years. It's the biggest or the second biggest employer in the town, and the factory itself got burnt to the ground in the recent fires. And consequently, there will be a number of people who were otherwise previously employed in that capacity, in that facility, who will, not for a short period of time, hopefully, have that employment. So the problems associated with the fire linger on, and this is just but one of those further problems that's going to impact on these communities.
And tell me about that. My understanding is that the co-op is it the second largest employer in the town?
Well, it's debated. Some say the largest, some say the second largest. We have about 8 full-time employees, but on the books, there's approximately 50 casuals and part-timers. And how it works, Peter, particularly well, is that our busiest time of the year is through the winter periods, and that's when the tourism, of course, in Mallacoota is at its quietest period. So people who are extremely busy throughout the summer periods with their caravan parks or shops or whatever else, when it gets quieter, they look to supplement their income by doing some further work, and that's when the co-op is benefit by having these people available to be able to work over that period of time. And the additional income, of course, means that these people can live more comfortably in Mallacoota and have an income spread over the whole of the year. So the loss of the facility will impact upon that. But I am pleased to say that we have in these preliminary stages, and we've only had approximately a week, but a number of the government agencies, such as the Export Accreditation and the people from the relevant local governments, have all given us very positive indicators that they will bend over backwards to assist us, firstly, in getting a temporary business going, which would allow us to continue to buy from our suppliers, our owners, and also to employ some of those people in the workforce who have would otherwise have lost their job until such time as the factory is rebuilt. So small steps, but it's only been a few days and things are looking positive out of a mass of rubble. So there is some light at the end of the tunnel. We do intend to rebuild. We do intend to do and to keep the sales and the suppliers operating. And that, of course, will at least give some of our casuals work in the short term with a view to giving them their full-time casual positions back once the new factory is up and operating.
Mm. And, Jeff, how many divers supply the co-op and what happens for those divers?
Okay, well, look, we have 23 licences in the Eastern Zone. And each of those licences employs a diver and a deckhand and sometimes two deckhands. So there's a great flow-on effect. You say, oh, 23 licences. But attached to those 23 licences is 23 divers. Attached to those 23 divers is at least, 23 deckhands. And it just goes on and on and on and feeds through the community. So there are a number of people employed in that aspect. But more directly is those people who are the casual employees and the full-time employees who were engaged in the actual operations of the co-op that burnt down.
And you have, of course, lost your processing equipment. Do you have a plan B? Is there somewhere else you can process it, or what happens in the more immediate future?
Yep, we're hoping upon hope that we can, in a relatively short period of time, get back as far as our operations and our customers, who are about 99% overseas customers. We're hoping that we will be able to take supply at the facility position where we operate, just next door to that. There's an area there where we can take supply. And we may then be able to continue on by installing some live tanks short term to be able to take on some abalone to sell live, and to then, as the alternative for the different sorts of abalone that might not be suitable for live sales, to go contract canning, to engage somebody in Victoria to be able to do the contract canning for us, which will enable us to still make our sales to our overseas customers. So while all that's going on, of course, that's the temporary measure. We'll be running like beavers to try and get the plans and the approvals to undertake a reconstruction of a new factory. And it'd be nice to be speaking to you, Peter, in 2 years' time and have a bigger and better operation, which is what we're hoping for.
Well, I hope so too. Let's do that. Let's check back in with you again. Jeff Ellis is the chair of the Mallacoota Abalone Cooperative and says it's been a week since news was received, I guess, or it was became obvious that the facility had been burnt, but it sounds like a lot of work has already gone into it. Contingency plans. Jeff, thank you for joining us on the Country Hour.
Thanks very much, Peter, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Jeff. Jeff Ellis there. It's 20 minutes past 12. This is the Victorian Country Hour. Peter Somerville here with you this afternoon. And from Mallacoota, we now head to the northeast of the state, where parts of the region were described as a war zone over the weekend, with the impacts on farms expected to be significant. Cameron Hilton is with Corcoran Parker at Wodonga. I spoke with him earlier today while he was in a convoy of vehicles heading into the region. And we would like to hear a bit more than that from Cameron. Let's try that again.
Just heading in a convoy heading up to Corryong again. Coming out of here on Friday. Been up there since last Monday and coming out of here on Friday and then had the weekend away and then head back in now with a convoy of milk tankers and hay trucks and a few private vehicles.
What's the significance of that? How hard is it to get access into Corryong at the moment?
Yeah, pretty... I suppose they're doing their... The officials are doing their job, but it's just a bit frustrating, I suppose, just trying to get livestock out and get that sorted. But, everyone's got to take human safety first, I suppose, and logistically, it's frustrating. That's probably the word.
Yeah, of course. And so there's milk tankers going in. How long since they've been able to get access?
They tell me they went in on last Thursday, but that I'm not 100% sure of that.
And what about getting the livestock out? Is this the first time producers will be able to get stock out?
No, we were able to get a few stock out on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday last week. Some cattle were affected, some cattle weren't affected. And so that's what we did. That's how it is. And then hopefully the highway can open up or they can let get a little bit more freedom and get lost trucks out, you know. Like, logistically, that's a frustrating part of it, but the role that the officials
are doing. And we're just losing you a bit. Hopefully you're still there. But talk us through the extent of the stock losses that you've seen. How many are lost? How many need to get out and get to the sale yards or otherwise?
Yeah, quite a substantial amount of stock losses. Like, I don't know. They've only been tied up in the Casual North and a little bit of Pintolder area. So I haven't ever been over the bigger and narrow Pintolder valleys properly and that, but there would be substantial stock losses. I'm not too sure on how many, but it would be quite substantial. Like, it's Kaji War on Wednesday morning was like a war zone. Getting phone calls, not to bring up something, to destroy stock.
Oh, we are just losing you again, but we'll keep persisting until we drop out. Your clients that you're speaking with, how are they going? Are they okay?
They're exhausted. They're stuffed. They're doing as good as you possibly can, but as I said, I've only spoken to a limited amount of people due to not being able to get too far. Hopefully today and tomorrow and Wednesday, we're going to have a couple of our guys up here and get around as many as possible. And our local guy, Rod McKenzie, he's been impacted. His own place has been impacted in his house. So, it's quite every coffee you see, every farmer you see, you know, they're doing the best they can with what they've got.
Be devastating for everyone up there. And just what about the infrastructure losses on farms? How extensive have they been?
Yeah, look, through Casual Valley there and Casual North, not too bad. It's a truck that wobbles very tight, you know. Like a lot of hay that's gone. That's where it is.
We have just about lost you, but... thank you so much for your time. Is there anything else that we should include at this point? And perhaps fortuitously, that's where we lost Cameron Hilton, who's with Corcoran Parker at Wodonga. It's 24 minutes past 12 on the Country Hour. Peter Somerville here with you this afternoon. And we're staying in the northeast, where we're joined by David Wortman, who's the Mayor of Tawong. David, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Peter.
What's your assessment of how things are going in your region?
Oh, look, it's been devastating to our shire, the fire impact. Yes, and the worst part is there's still an active fire, and trying to get any services or relief in there you've got to be escorted into the fire ground.
And you produce beef and sheep, I believe. What's the impact at your place?
Oh, look, we're in a watch and act zone, but the fire is about 20 k's east of us, but depending on wind changes, we could be impacted, yes.
What's it mean for farmers in the area? How have they been affected?
Well, look, I was up there with a strike team on Saturday, and, you know, the fire raced through the Tintoldra area and Walwer area, and we've had bushfires before, but I've never seen bushfires burn so much prime agricultural land. And look, homes have been lost, of course, and I just heard the tail end of Cameron's interview. And, yeah, look, the farm infrastructure and council infrastructure has been lost, and of course, the stock losses have been horrendous.
And on that, you're the mayor of your council of Tawong. Tell me, what are the impacts to council assets? We're not hearing so much about that at the moment.
Well, again, we can't get in there. The roads are blocked, and we haven't assessed everything. But just the stories that we're hearing, there's going to be a major damage to infrastructure.
And for people who aren't familiar with the region, you said before that it's prime agricultural land. Can you paint a picture for us of what it normally looks like and how it contrasts to now?
Well, like everywhere, it's been a dry year, but in the Upper Murray, they have done okay rainfall-wise, and they had a reasonable spring, that has contributed to the spread of the bushfires. Like there was a lot of dry feed standing, and the speed at which the fires raced through those valleys, were just incredible. You know, you just can't defend with the winds of those couple of days. You just couldn't pull the fires up.
What are your main concerns for your region now? What are the fire aside, of course, but what are the big issues?
Well, I've been to a number of community meetings, and the information we're getting is the fires are going to get bigger. They're probably going to merge. The fires in New South Wales, just north of us, and the fires in New South Wales could come back and impact us in the Upper Murray, and there's fires south of us, of course, too. And so we can't start the release part of the operation until it's safe. And I just feel for all those families in the Upper Murray. I mean, they need help, but it's just so hard to get things on the ground there at the moment because the roads are blocked.
Okay. Well, David Wortman, certainly our thoughts are with you and all the people in your region, and we thank you for joining us on the Country Hour this afternoon.
Yeah, Peter, could I just add one thing?
Of course.
Yeah. Look, the offers of support from federal, state, neighbouring municipalities has been overwhelming. And once we can start the relief operation, there will be help. But we're just in a very difficult phase at the moment with the active fire.
Okay, so you appreciate the help, but is it maybe a bit too soon?
In some cases, yes. It is.
Okay. Well, let's keep in touch, and we'll keep across how things unfold in your region.
Thank you very much, Peter. Thank you.
Thanks. David Wortman there is the Mayor of the Tawong Shire Council.
On ABC Radio Victoria, this is the Victorian Country Hour.
Where it is 29 minutes past 12, Peter Somerville here with you this afternoon. And right now we're going to cross to Tom Delamont at the Weather Bureau. Tom, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Can you walk us through what's the latest weather-wise?
Well, we're seeing that cloud bands, which brought some rain across Victoria over the weekend, gradually move eastwards at the moment. So that rainfall extending into the northeast and east Gippsland. And we have seen since 9 a.m. some rainfall totals pushing up towards 5 millimetres about some of the alpine regions, 4.2 at Falls Creek. So we expect probably another 5 millimetres or so to fall through those areas and potentially a little bit higher on the Gippsland coast before that rain gradually makes its way eastwards and should largely clear tonight. Apart from the rain, though, we're seeing quite a lot of smoke haze extending out of the fires to the east, so right across the northeast of the state, right across Gippsland and into the central districts, and also starting to get into the southwest district now, quite a bit of smoke, and that's likely to continue for most of those areas for quite a few days.
And you mentioned there, what's happening in the next few days and further out?
Yeah, we continue to see fairly settled weather through Tuesday and Wednesday as a ridge of high pressure sits over Tasmania and a high pressure system gradually moves through to the east. So just a little bit of drizzle around the central district, including Melbourne, to start off the day tomorrow, but should clear by afternoon. And some isolated showers over Gippsland, maybe mostly about the far east, where we could see some falls up to around 5 or 6 millimetres. But elsewhere, we expect the rainfall to be less than 2 millimetres for tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, those isolated showers continuing about the Gippsland area. Again, falls look to be fairly light, less than 3 millimetres for Wednesday. And as we go into Thursday, another surge of easterly winds through southern Victoria, likely to continue bringing the smoke into southern areas and also pushing it across the northeast. But apart from that, generally a dry day across the state, just partly cloudy in the south and light winds in the north. But those light winds do mean that we will see temperatures start to build across the northwest in particular, pushing up into the, or about the 40-degree mark on Thursday across the northwest. And that's ahead of a cold front, which will cross the state on Friday. So those fairly, or quite hot and dry and fairly strong northwesterly winds ahead of the front. We'll see temperatures rise through Gippsland, pushing up into the high 30s and generally into the low 40s across north central and northeastern parts of the state. And then quite a strong and squally west to southwesterly change to follow with the front. Temperatures will drop quite a bit and we will see some rain develop following the front as well. So, yeah, another sort of that's the day we're looking towards for the next spike in fire dangers will be on Friday with that gusty wind change moving through and also the hot temperatures ahead of it. But there will be some rain to follow, mainly across southern parts, and that continues into Saturday morning before clearing away to the east later on Saturday. So that leaves us pretty much a cool to mild weekend with southwesterly winds tending a bit more southeasterly on Sunday. And at this stage, the start to next week looks like we'll see temperatures start to build inland once again as winds tend easterly, but still mild through southern parts and generally dry. So yeah, really in the outlook period, apart from the smoke affecting quite a few areas over the next couple of days, it's really Friday that we're looking towards for the next day of significant weather across Victoria.
And Tom, I mentioned earlier in the program that I was happy here for Gippsland about that cyclone potentially forming off the Pilbara coast. Should I have kept my mouth shut?
No, it is. It is, I guess, yeah, we'll provide some tropical moisture as it moves down over inland parts of WA. And any time we get a system move through, there is potential to link up with that. So that's what we've seen with this system moving through over the weekend. And today is a bit of a link up to that that cyclone moisture. And then again on Friday, we should see another link to what will be the well-decayed system over inland parts of WA. But we'll drag some of that tropical moisture down again. So I guess the difference between these ones and the changes that we saw come through in December is that we had no real activity, rainfall activity over the tropics. But now that we do, we are starting to see a little bit of rain move through each time we have a change come across Victoria.
Well, Tom, we're all about that tropical moisture then. Thank you for joining us on the Country Hour.
Not a problem.
Tom Delamont there with the Bureau of Meteorology. It's 26 minutes to one on the Country Hour. Peter Somerville here with you this afternoon. And, of course, you can get in touch with us here on 0467 842 722. Send us a text on that number. Just as someone has done, an anonymous text here, what about the Eden wood chip mill, which is important to East Gippsland? Well, it's funny that you should ask that, because that's our next story. We've heard reports this morning that the wood chip mill at Eden has been impacted by fire on the New South Wales south coast. The facility's owners haven't returned our calls. However, Shane Sproul is the site manager at the timber mill at Brodribb, which is just out of Orbost in East Gippsland. Waste timber from the Brodribb mill is trucked to Eden for export, so this supply is now expected to be impacted. I spoke with Shane earlier. Shane Sproul is the site manager at the mill.
My understanding at Eden is that fire that was at Mallacoota has come back around and kept going towards Eden. And we just got confirmation, I think it was yesterday morning, that there was some impact on that Eden chip mill. It won't affect us greatly, and we don't know what the damage is there. So.
Because you only send a percentage of your timber to Eden, don't you?
We only send a percentage of the waste chip to Eden, yes.
There'd been some sort of impact at Eden even before the fire, though, is that right? Some sort of maybe contractual or, you know, demand changes?
There was a downturn in the supply of wood chip, yes, to China, and it affected Western Australia, I think in Geelong there as well. So it affected a lot of the chip suppliers down the bottom half of Australia here.
Yeah. And what about there at the mill at Brodribb itself? You've had a fire close by?
Yeah, I believe the fire's about 8 km out the back, more towards Cabbage Tree Way. We think we don't have it under control yet. I'm just hoping that the people at Cabbage Tree were all right, and that was 2 or 3 days ago when that northerly come through. We were a bit worried about it there, but... you've just got no information on it, that's all. Police have had the roadblocks here at Orbost, so we sort of can't get our crews out through there.
So there's nothing happening at the mill at the moment because you can't get there?
No, I think, I'm pretty sure maintenance are out there today checking out things. We've got a fair firefighting machinery out there, so maintenance are going through checking all that again, making sure we've got water. We don't want anyone's lives lost out there, so it is to evacuate the site if something does happen again.
Yeah, I can imagine. And tell me, what do these fires mean for timber supply into the mill?
We don't know that. We've got, in past, there was no effect because you can still log it for a certain period. More or less the timber up around Buchan, there's some timber up in the higher country there, the Alpine and Mountain Ash, that'll die if it's been impacted by fire, but the mixed species generally keeps growing, it'll come back. So we currently are logging in a burned out area up above Buchan anyway, and it was all fire salvage that was coming in. So, but in saying all that, we don't know what Vic Forest has got planned. So,
yeah. Are you confident that you'll be able to log the burnt timber given the recent announcements from the government?
We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen there.
It sounds like it's still really, there's so much unknown and a real mixed bag then.
Well, it is. Until these fires are put out, we've got no idea what's going to happen, to be honest.
Is there anything else that we should talk about or include at this point?
Just that the logging crews are up there fighting the fires, which is doing a great effort. And I presume they'll be fighting those fires for a couple of months yet. So if we didn't have them guys in the bush, be a lot more devastating, I'd say. We've got a lot less logging crews now than we used to have. We've only got a 25% of what was in East Gippsland that's left here now in logging crews. But those guys are up there fighting with their bulldozers and graders and everything. So.
And do you know roughly how many machines are we talking about here?
There's possibly, I know there's about five logging contractors locally. So it could be up to 10 logging contractors if they bring them in from other areas. They'll be using their dozers to clear fire breaks and all that sort of thing.
That was Shane Sproul, who is the site manager at the Brodribb Timber Mill, just out of Orbost in East Gippsland. And from forestry, we now move to livestock. And it's too early to know how many livestock have been destroyed because of the fires. But Sharon Williams from Agriculture Victoria says support is on hand for farmers dealing with burnt livestock.
We have 19 field teams working across the northeast Upper Murray and East Gippsland areas. We're undertaking property assessments to try and understand what the impact is on those properties in those fire-affected areas.
Okay, and now that's something that the authorities haven't really been able to determine due to a lack of access to those areas. Have you got any indication about the numbers of animals that have perished in the fires? Have you got any indication at all?
It's a bit early for us to have a clear picture on the full impact of stock. We know that there are potentially some extensive stock losses out there through some feedback that we're receiving. But until we have full access and we're able to talk to the property and the livestock owners, it's difficult for us to tell that.
Okay, but you do have a message for farmers who might be dealing with dead livestock as a result of the fires. What is the best, or indeed injured livestock, what is the best thing that they can be doing at this stage?
So we're wanting the livestock owners and property owners to contact us on the Vic Emergency Hotline on 1-800-226-226, and that way we can start to collect some information from them so that we can ensure that they're provided with the support that they need.
So why would a farmer do that? How would that help them?
So we can provide them with some support with euthanising their livestock if that's what needs to happen. We can also refer them on to other support services that they may need, including things like fodder, fence repairs, and also if they just need some general support to be able to, you know, put their property back into some sort of management.
I do see that the Federal Agriculture Minister, Bridget McKenzie, has today been talking about bringing in the army to help create burial pits for livestock. Is that something that you're involved in?
We are having discussions with the local government areas across the fire-affected areas to work with them for the burial pits to be able to dispose of the carcasses. So we understand that the local governments are under a bit of pressure to be able to keep up with that. So we are trying to work with them to support that.
Keeping in mind that some people listening to this may be in isolated communities and may not have access directly to personnel on the ground, what is your message for them?
So definitely the message is for those people to contact us via the Vic Emergency Hotline so that we can talk through the support that they need and ensure that we provide them with the area of expertise that they need. So the contact number again is 1-800-226-226.
Okay, and if farmers are looking for fodder or for feed, can Agriculture Victoria help out there, or are you suggesting go through Victorian Farmers Federation or Need for Feed, or again potentially through the local council?
So the fodder distribution is being managed through the Victorian Farmers Federation. So we encourage landowners and property owners to contact the VFF on 1-300-882-833.
Sharon Williams from Agriculture Victoria speaking there with Kath Sullivan. And those numbers again, for fodder, you can try the VFF, the Victorian Farmers Federation, on 1-300-882-833. And for support from Agriculture Victoria, 1-800-226-226.
You're listening to the Victorian Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
Where it is 16 minutes to one. Peter Somerville here with you this afternoon. And again, a warm hello to our ABC Melbourne listeners who have joined us again today. Well, there's been several convoys of hay making their way into fire-affected communities. Need for Feed had a large convoy which came into Gippsland over the weekend. I caught up with Graham Cockrell, who's the coordinator of the Need for Feed program. He stopped in at our sales studio while he was making his way back home this morning.
We've been bringing loads of hay down here for the farmers burnt out. First couple came down on New Year's Day. And on Thursday, we got three loads into Buchan under police and escort. And yesterday, we had loads go through to Orbost, which the road's open to again now. But yesterday, we also got six loads back through to Buchan and another 15 semi-loads up past Glanderby, which had had no assistance until then.
And what are we talking about? How many trucks, how many bales of hay?
Yesterday, at least 55. And I'm saying at least because we know we had some trucks join in along the way who hadn't registered with us, but that's all right, that's okay. And we also had at least 20 utes and trailers or cars and trailers towing small bales and carrying dog food and water and care packs and all sorts of stuff.
And the farmers that you dropped the hay off to, I imagine they would have been pretty happy to see.
Yeah, very. Yeah. The guy I went to, and myself and another truck, we unloaded at a place just past Glanderby. And the fire had come out of the bush and taken out about 80% of his pasture, all his fences, two hay sheds, which he had enough hay in there for the next year. Part of his stockyards and stuff like that, and the cattle that had survived were eating the hay as it came off the trucks. So it was pretty. We did a Facebook live feed from up there, obviously with his permission, and right on cue as I was talking about the cows, one of them mooed thanks to us. So it was pretty. it was pretty good, and obviously the people are grateful. Yeah.
And the cows too, which is...
Oh, and the cows, of course. Yeah, of course. That's well, it's about... It is, and we laugh about that, but it is about both. It is for drought, we're a project that's been going 13 years and we've been working on the drought for the last 2 years. But for drought, we just do primary producers. But for fire, it's everybody. So it's hobby farmers, primary producers and everyone in between. And that's as much for animal welfare as it is for human welfare, because people stress about how they're going to feed their animals and, along with, replacing fences and everything else. But the immediate thing is, like, fences are further on down the line, feeding the animals or shifting them out or both, a bit of both. That's what needs to happen immediately after a fire. Yeah.
And tell me, where did this hay come from and who was involved in getting it up here?
Who was involved were volunteers. We have quite a few regulars and just off social media, basically. So we've got a Facebook page, Need for Feed Disaster Relief, and a website, needforfeed.org, so people can volunteer on that or donate on that. And donations is fodder and obviously money to put fuel in trucks. So the people volunteer their vehicle and their time, don't get anything for that. All they get is they get an offer of fuel reimbursement if they want it or if they need it. So, but that obviously for a lot of vehicles over a long period of time costs a lot of money.
Mm. Yeah. And you're here in Gippsland at the moment, but you're also doing some work in the northeast.
We're in the northeast. We've had some loads into there already. And as I mentioned before, we're a Lions Club project. We're working in conjunction with Baruga Lions, so they've been working with us since the dairy crisis, about 3 years ago, whenever that started. So they've been working very closely with us and two of their current president and immediate past president are members on our committee, our Need for Feed committee as well. So we're giving them as much as port as we can up there. So we'll be getting loads into there while it's safe this week before the next bad day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what about in terms of ongoing support? Have you got enough? Have you got that sort of groundswell to keep it up and come back again?
We hope so. Yeah, we hope so. And you know, you do worry about being finances stretched too far and, you know, stretched too far, not enough volunteers, especially with so many fires happening at the moment. We did... we've done the Mid-North Coast fires at the start of December. Mid-November, we did the fires up around Tenterfield and Glen Innes, so we're interstate as well. We would have liked to do the Stanthorpe fires in Queensland at that time, but we couldn't get through from where we had hay. Hopefully that will... It's a bit late, but hopefully that better late than never. Hopefully that will happen this week. So we've got requests for assistance up there, and we've got requests for assistance further up, but we don't have... the only fodder we could get up there would probably have to purchase it, and we didn't have the donations to do that sort of thing at that time. But we, you know, we've also got we've had four trucks over at South Australia this week as well, which is we've spread ourselves out a fair way, but people keep stepping up to help, which is really good.
Yeah. Good to hear. Yeah. We are almost out of time.
Yeah, that's all right.
Anything else that we need to
mention? Oh, just if people can, we do need way more donated fodder, because the fires obviously aren't over yet. They won't even be over in a couple of weeks. And I think the recovery time down here, even if the fires stop now, the recovery time here, down here would be probably 3 months. And obviously if the fires don't stop now, you'd probably add 3 to 6 months on the end of that people would need some sort of support for.
Yeah. We're hoping it's sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Graham, thanks for joining us on the Country Hour.
No worries. Thank you.
That was Graham Cockerell from Need for Feed. And you can find information about Need for Feed online or via Facebook. 9 minutes to one on the Country Hour. Peter Somerville here with you this afternoon. We do have the markets back today, but before we head there, bushfires in the northeast of the state have wiped out numbers on day one of Wodonga's annual Blue Ribbon Weaner Sale last Thursday. Some farmers couldn't get their cattle to market because of road closures, and while numbers aren't confirmed, other cattle destined for sale almost certainly perished in the fires. Matt Tinkler is the livestock manager with Elders at Aubrey. He says the yarding was down around 2,500 head.
Yeah, so day one sale was advertised between 6,500 to 7,000 cattle. Ultimately, it ended up with about 4,200 or 300 cattle, and that was a combination of predominantly fire. Seasonal conditions would have had a little bit of bearing on some of those cattle coming. The fact that it didn't maybe rain in the north, which it can often do between Christmas and New Year, but certainly some cattle out of our Upper Murray region, which has obviously been pretty widespread and had some fair coverage and been widely burned, and just the ability to be able to muster yard, and also the roadblock stopping trucks and people going in and out of that area has ultimately led to a few less numbers.
So the first day of sales, probably around that 2,500 head mark that didn't get to market. Now, you talked about road closures and that sort of thing. Do you think of that numbers that many would have actually perished in the fires?
Look, reports are that there's been some very big stock losses, so I'd anticipate that there would be some of those. I really couldn't comment on it because I haven't seen it and I haven't had the chance. Communications are pretty scratchy out of that area at the moment, so it's only a bit of hearsay at the moment. But given the ferocity of the fire and the area that's been burned, it wouldn't surprise me if that's taken place.
And for those people that have been cut off, is there any indications when they will actually be able to get their cattle to market?
There has been some trucks allowed to go in and out in the last couple of days on special permit. Hopefully that we can get back to normal and some people can get some options there and be able to ship some cattle there.
You talked about communication issues, but have you had any opportunity to talk with any of your clients about the impact of the fires?
Yeah, I have. I've had some brief contacts with a couple of clients. One client that's on the edge of the fire and anticipating or anxiously waiting. Another client that's been significantly burnt out and some planning about what we do there. Unfortunately, there's a couple of areas that I haven't been able to have a lot of contact with some clients and had failed attempts to try and get up in the area through roadblocks. So, yeah, it's just a bit of a wait-and-see period at the moment.
And we've been talking a lot on the radio about the need for emergency fodder, volunteer organisations trucking fodder in already, and the VFF coordinating fodder donations. How desperately needed is that fodder for those fire-affected farmers?
Oh, look, absolutely imperative. You know, the area that burnt, they had a very big body of dry feed there, probably the best in the state, and it's obviously gone now over a big area, so there's a lot of people with nothing. So, you know, and also there's a lot of people that did, they do conserve a lot of fodder in that area to get them through the winter months, and that's, you know, ultimately we need fodder for the immediate period, but then we need replacement fodder too. You know, there's a lot of clients up there that would have had big stacks because they get very cold and very fogged in through the winter period, so they rely on a lot of hay there, and they've lost all that, I suppose, that food bank that they require to get them through the winter. So.
And that was livestock agent Matt Tinkler from Elders speaking with Angus Verley. Sticking with livestock, now to what I think is one of the best parts of the program, but it might be a bit foreign for our city cousins. It's time now to head to the cattle markets. And first this afternoon to Caroline Ronald at Pakenham.
Good afternoon. Agents penned 1,327 cattle for the first sale back in 2020. The quality was mixed with all weights and grades on offer, and the regular field of buyers were in attendance. Processors paid up to $320 for the pick of the veal, trade steers $255 to $295, trade heifers $237 to $272, feeder steers $244 to $282, heavy feeder heifers reached up to 304 cents per kilo, grown steers and bullocks $255 to $291, and the manufacturing dairy bullocks made up to $230. With 354 cows yet to be sold, I'm Caroline Ronald for MLA at Pakenham.
Thanks, Caroline. And next to Leanne Dax at Wagga.
Numbers were elevated for the first sale of the year, with 3,640 yarded. Some cattle were from the fire-ravaged area of Combargo. The market lacked drive over most categories, and quality was a contributing factor. Trade steers and heifers slipped 3 to 4 cents. The trade heifers, $230 to $284. Trade steers, $250 to $288. Feeder steers, $330 to $400 kilo, fell 20 cents, $2 to $295. The heavyweights were back a few cents, $250 to $305. Feeder heifers, 2 to 8 cents cheaper, $222 to $275. Heavy grown steers, $500 to $600 kilo, $240 to $288. Good quality cows lost 5 cents, $188 to $211, while the middle run dipped 15 cents, ranging in price from $155 to $202. I'm Leanne Dax for MLA.
Thanks, Leanne. And next we hear from Graham Pimer at Bendigo Lambs.
Good afternoon, everyone. The first half of 2020 at Bendigo saw 11,250 lambs and 4,800 sheep drawn. Quality range from average to very good, with most lambs now shorn, presenting in shorn condition. Heavy lambs sold at 218, with a quality trade weight selling from 165 to 178. They've averaged around 730. All the regular buying group attended and operated on the sheep and lamb run. Heavy unshorn lambs sold for $218. Restocking activity was limited, and they sold from 73 to 138. There was 4,800 sheep, and they sold to steady demand with plenty of quality on offer. Heavy ewes reached $208. The light trade weight lambs, 18 to 22 kg, sold from 146 to 159. They've averaged around 720. Medium trade weight lambs, 22 to 24, sold from 165 to 178. They've averaged around 730. Export 3 and 4 score lambs, 26 to 30 kg, sold from 192 to 220. Medium weight sheep, 18 to 24 kg, sold from 80 to 155. Heavy merino mutton, averaging around 560. Heavy hoggets made to 160. Rams made to 103. It's been Graham Pimer at Bendigo from LA.
Thanks, Graham. And lastly, to Chris Agnew at Mortlake Cattle.
Agents yarded 326 cattle at Mortlake today. The overall quality of the yarding was average to very good. All the major buyers, with the exception of one processor, competed in a market that was firm to slightly softer in places than the last market held last year. Vela steers, a C3, sold to the trade, 248 to 263. Heifers, 242 to 264. See muscled yearlings made from 210 to 262 cents for both heifers and steers. Grown steers, a C3 and C4, made from 210 to 286, and the heifer portion making from 200 to 266 cents. manufacturing steers made from 190 to 235 cents a kg. Cows offered today were mainly beef bred, with the C3 and C4 cows making between 200 to 230 cents, and the D2 and D1 cows making from 120 to 171. Beef bred bulls sold from 245 to 260 cents. At Mortlake, this is Chris Agnew reporting for MLA.
Thanks, Chris. And that is about all we've got time for on the Country Hour this afternoon. It's been Peter Somerville here with you today. Nikolai will be back tomorrow, and I'm heading out to Gippsland to hear a bit more from those fire-affected regions. Very quickly to a few texts that we haven't got to during the show. From Wendy, logging burnt timber was done years ago, successfully at Nangwari in South Australia. Learnt this from their museum. And also, how are farmers who don't have phones supposed to contact the VFF? Good question.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listener.